Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
Here we go.
Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
Here we go.
Everything we do it for you.
Let's go.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
It is actually not some combination of Dave, Jamie, Adam, and Heath. Heath is here, and I'm Chris Towers, filling in for Adam Azer, who's on his honeymoon, right?
I believe he is on his honeymoon. I don't remember where he said he was going. I don't generally listen that closely when he talks about his personal life.
What?
Exactly.
How's everybody doing? It's Thursday, July 13th. This is the Fantasy Football Today podcast, and we've got all kinds of stuff to talk about. We've got very little news. It's the middle of July.
Right.
There'll be plenty of news in about 10 days, but right now there's nothing to talk about as far as news. There's a little bit. So we're going to talk dynasty discussion. We're going to give a little update on how's your Scott Fishbowl team looking, Heath?
I have never been happier with my Scott Fishbowl team than I am so far this year. Now, part of that is because I've only selected like 8 players, and I'm getting ready to select all the guys that will make me unhappy.
Yeah.
But things have really come together nicely. I think for the first time in the history of the Scott Fishbowl, I'm not going to be bad.
I'm sure you guys have talked about it on the podcast before, but that's a 2-quarterback, 4-flex with a super flex league. It's crazy. So we're going to talk a little 2QB discussion as well in that time. We're going to talk 5 guys that Heath is conflicted on. We're going to talk 3 fantasy football nuggets of wisdom that Heath knows. And one potentially,
we'll debate whether they're wisdom.
One potentially controversial one,
yeah,
from what I understand. We'll get to your emails, fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. But first, start your fantasy football league right by booking your draft party at B-Dubs. You'll get a free draft kit and enjoy a draft feast of boneless wings, 3 sides, and 3 shareables at a special price. Only at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. At participating locations while supplies last. I've been trying, you know, I used to be the commissioner of my big league, and then my buddy Mike won the league 2 years in a row, and I told him if you win the second one, you have to be commissioner. That's your punishment for winning the league 2 years in a row. He took it on, did it for a year, gives me a call a couple weeks ago. I can't. I'm too busy. I got too much going on. I can't be the commissioner. Can you do it? Like, I don't have a busy life. Like, I'm not hosting podcasts.
You don't have a lot going on.
It's ridiculous. It's like herding cats. Being a commissioner of a fantasy football league, if you're ever asked, just say no.
It's the best.
It's the worst.
I love having the power.
Well, you do enjoy the commish show. All right, let's look at just a few news and notes items. CSN Bay Area reporter believes Carlos Hyde will have to compete for the starting job in San Francisco. And there's been some kind of lukewarm reports out of the Kyle Shanahan front office.
There have been lukewarm reports on almost everyone that was there before Shanahan got there.
Which is not unexpected.
No, it kind of makes sense. The way I take this, and we'll talk more about Hyde a little bit later in the show, but as long as he has is in the competition for a starting job, and they're not talking about trading him, he's going to win
you
it.
You got to assume, yeah.
He's the most talented running back there.
I mean, Tim Hightower, the
Joe Williams, Matt Breida,
4th-round pick, I think Joe Williams.
Yeah, Breida's an undrafted free agent.
The competition's not exactly stiff. We've seen Carlos Hyde be a very good running back as recently as a year ago, so I'm not particularly worried about that. Eric Ebron is, quote, overly excited about his role in the Detroit Lions offense this offseason. That's what he told SiriusXM Radio. And I think the big thing is he had just 6 red zone targets last season. He had Anquan Boldin departed.
Well,
basic tight end. Basically a tight end.
Departed for now. Boldin is going to sign with a team before camp. And there, I would not say there's a 50-50 chance he signs with the Lions again, but I would say there's a higher chance he signs with them than anyone else.
I just want, can someone just call him a tight end? That's what he is.
Are we going to call Larry Fitzgerald a tight end?
No, Larry Fitzgerald's a slot receiver. Anquan Boldin's a tight end.
Okay.
He averaged 8.7. He was Brandon Pettigrew in the Detroit Lions offense last year, except...
But he could catch.
He had 8 touchdowns last season, and that'd be nice as a tight end.
Right.
But if he doesn't sign... Eric Ebron, obviously, should benefit, hopefully.
Yeah, I have Ebron as a low-end number one tight end. I think he's in that collection of guys with Hunter Henry in PPR with Tyler Eifert that have top 5 potential, but could also just be really frustrating.
He was really frustrating last year. 61 catches for 711 yards. That's not bad. Only one touchdown. And I tweeted this yesterday. You agreed. I don't know if this is going to be on your list of things to talk about later on, but my basic thing is, if your only red flag for a player is he doesn't score touchdowns, that usually means he's being undervalued in fantasy.
Yes, and a point I'd like to make, he had 61 catches for 711 yards in 13 games.
Yeah.
His 16-game pace, very, very similar to what Travis Kelce did in 2015.
Mm-hmm. All right, Demaryius Thomas says he's past the hip problems that he dealt with last season. That's a good sign. Demaryius Thomas, I think he's almost 30. I think he turns 30 next year, so he's getting up there.
The whole aging curve seems to have changed just a little bit.
Sure.
For everywhere except for running back.
Fair.
He will turn 30 on Christmas.
The bigger thing, I think, for Demaryius Thomas is just, can the quarterback play in Denver improve? Although he was decent last year, and the price on his draft price has gone down enough that
right.
I think he's a fine pick.
Very fine number two wide receiver.
Bruce Arians continues to talk about getting David Johnson 30 touches. An article on CBSSports.com, quote, "I think 30 touches is not too much for him when you're talking about 10 receptions, 20 carries, and that's not 20 times up the middle where he's going to get busted up. We're going to make sure we take care of him." Bruce Arians also earlier in the offseason said he's too young to worry about getting run down. That's good for his fantasy value right up until the point where he gets run down.
Right.
And I guess the question is, are you worried that he's going to get run down this season or 3 years from now?
No. He's my number one running back. He's my number one overall player. I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to look Don't look a gift horse in the mouth, Chris.
It'd be really nice if he did get 480 touches this year.
Yes. If he gets 480 touches, he's going to just smash every record that he hasn't already smashed.
Bruce Arians was just talking crazy over the last couple of days because he also believes Carson Palmer can play until he's 42.
Palmer is what, 38?
37.
37. I'd say it's unlikely. Like when Tom Brady says that he can play until he's 42, I kind of believe that because if he gets worse every year just a little bit, then when he's 42, he might be Carson Palmer.
Maybe.
But my general feeling about Palmer and Brady and Breeze, as long as they were good last year, mm-hmm. I'm not going to worry too much about him being good the next year. Now, Palmer wasn't really great last year.
And there is some bounce back talk for him.
Yeah.
Well,
he doesn't have Michael Floyd dropping passes anymore.
Yeah. Presumably, John Brown is the team seems to believe they're past the issues that kept him off mm-hmm. the field last season. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think in a super flex or 2QB league like we're going to talk about in a little bit, Palmer's an excellent option.
Well, why don't we just talk about that right now?
Okay.
How's your Scott Fishbowl 7 league team looking at?
I was tweeting out last night, if anybody wants to know, what is Scott Fishbowl like? Like, how does it change everything? Well, in the 7th round of my draft, I was just torn whether I should take Alex Smith.
And which division are you in?
I got to choose my own division.
Oh, wow.
And I would guess if you saw a list of all of the names of the divisions, you could pick which one I chose.
Okay.
But I am in the Mr. Incredible division.
Sure.
I passed on Alex Smith. He came back to me last night with the 9th pick of the 8th round, and I felt like doing a dance. And that's all you need to know about Scott Fishbowl. I have Tom Brady and Alex Smith as my quarterbacks.
Yeah.
That's good. Mike Gillisley and Mark Ingram as my running backs. Mike Evans and A.J. Green as my receivers, just like you, I believe.
Yeah.
And then Kyle Rudolph and Jack Doyle as my tight ends. So Jamie will love the tight end group. This is a super flex with 4 flexes. Most everybody's going to play 2 QBs. It's also a point per first down league, except tight ends get 2.5 points per first down. So we'll be flexing tight ends. It's craziness.
I only have one quarterback.
Yeah.
My number one quarterback is not quite as good as your number one quarterback. My number one quarterback is Blake Bortles.
I'm not sure that your number one quarterback is as good as my number two quarterback.
He is.
Like, he's not as good of an NFL quarterback.
No, definitely not.
Okay.
But in fantasy, definitely.
As long as he gets 550 attempts.
I'm 3 picks away from the 8th round pick, and my team as currently constituted as Blake Bortles, Ezekiel Elliott, and Carlos Hyde, Mike Evans, A.J. Green, Sammy Watkins, and Zach Ertz.
Yeah,
it's good.
You have a lot of very good players.
I just don't know if it's right for this format.
I think the problem is, and this can just lead us directly into the 2 QB mm-hmm. discussion. We are both huge proponents of waiting on quarterback.
Yep.
And it's difficult for both of us when we go into a 2 QB league to shake that.
Yeah.
And I really, and part of that is because 2 years ago, my first year here at CBS playing in leagues, in the 2 QB league, we both waited until the very end.
Yep.
We both ended up in the finals, and I defeated you for the championship.
Sure.
But that's not really relevant because that's one league.
That's just you bragging.
Yes. The reason that I love waiting on quarterback in a one quarterback league is because there are 16, 17, maybe 18 number one QBs in my mind.
Yep.
There's that many quarterbacks that could score 300 fantasy points in a standard league.
And once you get past, I think the first 3 for sure and 4 if Andrew Luck is healthy, the gap between 5 and like 15 or 16
right.
might not be that big.
No,
and
it wasn't
last year. I think the difference was like 30 points overall or something.
I think the gap between 6 and 18 is basically upside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I currently have Marcus Mariota 6th because I think he could have a top 3 or 4 type season.
Yep.
I don't necessarily believe that Andy Dalton could have that, although he has before.
Yep.
But
at least once, maybe twice.
Yeah, on a per-game basis, twice. And you could probably even go down to Palmer at 19. The problem in a 2 QB league is Alex Smith is my 25th ranked quarterback.
Yep.
And you're done after that. Like, you're not happy to have Alex Smith as somebody you have to start every year or every week, but you're a lot happier than if you pass on Alex Smith and you're looking at Brian Hoyer, Paxton Lynch, Mike Glennon, Josh McCown, Deshaun Watson, Cody Kessler. And so I do think I took Tom Brady with the 4th overall pick in this league. And I know you hate that.
I mean, I understand.
But Brady's also my number one quarterback.
Yeah.
I think there's also, like, if you could have gotten one of those top 16 guys and then have Blake Bortles be your number 2,
yeah,
then your strategy. But the problem is, in this format, you see runs where you'll go 7 picks in a row that it's quarterbacks.
Yep.
And it's not 7 picks in a row because everybody wants to get Luck and Breeze and Brady. It's in the 4th or 5th round, and all of a sudden Tyrod, Dak, Dalton, Palmer, Eli, all those guys are gone. And that probably happened to you.
Yeah, there was kind of similar with tight end too, where because you get that 2.5 points for the first down, tight ends tend to be a little more valuable as well. And I wanted Jimmy Graham. He went 1 pick before me once I decided to take him. And then things tend to spiral in a league like this. But the 2 quarterback strategy, I will still probably not draft my first quarterback until after someone has their 2nd.
Right.
Probably after until multiple teams. But whereas in a 1 quarterback league, I'm perfectly content waiting until my very last pick because Phillip Rivers is usually there, and
right.
I'm totally fine with taking Phillip Rivers there. 13th round. 2 quarterback, maybe I take Phillip Rivers as my number 1, and then my next pick is Eli Manning or Tyrod Taylor, someone else that I feel pretty comfortable with, but I won't wait quite as long in that situation.
Yeah, my preferred strategy would be not taking, and I didn't do it in this format,
mm-hmm.
but what I'll probably do most of the year in 2 QB is I won't take one in the first few rounds. About the time we get to the QB8, QB9, QB10 range, the Cousins, Winston,
yep.
I want to get 2 of those guys.
Sure.
Just get 2 number ones, and then you need to draft a 3rd.
Yeah, I mean that, because if one of them gets hurt, you're screwed.
Well, and the fact that if you are playing, like, you can get through a running back bye week
yeah.
by picking up a guy that's just going to get 10 carries or whatever. In this type of league, when every quarterback's owned,
yeah.
you face a team that's starting 2 quarterbacks that week, and you're starting 1 quarterback,
you're screwed.
There's a loss.
Yeah, that's the risk, I guess, in not drafting a 3rd, but there are going to be 6 teams that can't have a 3rd quarterback, or four teams, I guess.
Yeah.
In any two quarterback league. So, you know, at that point, you do have to weigh whether, you know, getting a high upside wide receiver is worth not having Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
So, I guess that's the risk in two quarterback, but you can also put together just an absolutely stacked, loaded skill position situation in a two quarterback league, too.
And you may, if you work hard enough on the waiver wire, end up with a good situation everywhere else. Like, yeah. It can work.
It's just, it's risky.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about your, back after the draft in May, you released a top 100 in Dynasty. You also released top 75 at each position and 35 at tight end, something like that?
Yeah, it's right in that range.
All right.
I don't remember exactly what the number was.
What we're going to do is we're going to spend a few minutes just comparing guys who are ranked higher or lower in your dynasty than your year-long. Do you want to talk a little dynasty strategy first? How do you approach dynasty? Let's say you're drafting a dynasty league right now. How far do you let someone like Tom Brady, who may only have three seasons left, but might be the top quarterback for two of them?
Yeah, I generally, with all positions except for quarterback, try to look at things basically as a three-year window, mm-hmm. which I think is a much shorter window than the typical dynasty player looks at. I also think that it's kind of likely that most people overrate rookies yeah. and youth, and then they underrate guys after they're bad as rookies,
yes,
which we generally expect. People are generally bad as rookies.
Yeah.
So I think you can take advantage of that just a little bit. As far as the question about somebody, like Brady's kind of a unique situation, mm-hmm. and so is Breeze.
Yeah.
Like, those are guys you're only going to get likely 2 to 3, maybe 4 years out of, but they're the best at their position.
Yep.
It just totally depends on whether you're trying to win now or build for the future. I'm almost always trying to win now.
You should. Like, the
future, don't even know how long the league's going to last.
Right. Like, I've been in dynasty leagues that lasted 3 years, and then you look at your pick of that highly touted rookie who probably won't be good until his third season, and all of a sudden you're
right.
Like, you spent all that time for nothing. So I think valuing the now is more important, but you can reach a point where you have diminishing returns on that.
And then we say that, and all these guys that you're going to say are higher in dynasty are pretty much rookies.
But they should be.
Right.
Like, rookies should be, like, a lot of them just aren't going to be fantasy contributors right now, but you still have to draft them pretty high in a dynasty league. So you look at John Ross, a really good example. Super talented player, going to be an incredible deep ball threat if he hits, but in all likelihood, he's probably going to get 60 targets this season, 70 targets, something like that.
I think that's fair.
And it's really hard. It doesn't matter how good of a home run threat you are. If you get 70 targets over 16 games, you're probably only a starting caliber wide receiver a few times during the course of the season. Those times when you hit on your big play. But other than that, you know, you're hoping he develops into a 110 target guy
right.
down the line, in which case he could be DeSean Jackson, who's just a solid starting option, even if his production is not solid. So, you know, so there are seven guys ranked inside of your top 70 in Dynasty who are not ranked inside of your top 100 right now for the 2017 season.
In redraft, okay.
In redraft. The highest one, Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
Number 36.
I think Henry.
And he's 104. Like, he's not that far out of your top 100 right now.
And the thing, like, the thing that's probably weirder about these, like, if you're wondering which of these stands out amongst the consensus, mm-hmm. it's Derrick Henry being 104 in redraft.
Yeah.
He's being drafted in the 6th, 5th round sometimes.
And that could be a league winner.
If DeMarco Murray gets hurt, yes. And I understand why, I've taken Henry in the 6th or 7th when I drafted DeMarco Murray mm-hmm. in the 2nd. It feels terrible spending two of your first yep. 6 picks on one backfield. All that being said, I think Henry is phenomenally talented. And as soon as he gets the opportunity, I expect him to be a number one running back.
Which could be as soon as next season.
It could be week one.
Yeah, it could be.
It's one DeMarco Murray injury away. So I have him as a 3rd-round pick, 4th-round pick in Dynasty. Sometimes you may not even get him there. I almost feel like in the Dynasty drafts I've done, he's underrated in Dynasty and overrated yeah. in redraft.
I think that kind of makes sense, because if you view him as just a stud, who's mm-hmm. it's just an opportunity thing. Well, you can't bet on that opportunity in year long in a redraft league, because it's just, you might just waste a 6th round pick. Like, there's just a chance that you just Like, you start him once
right.
when you're desperate on a bye week. Which probably, I mean, with the exception of, what, week 17 and then some early games where he scored, he wasn't that useful last season.
Right.
He was okay.
Right.
But in Dynasty, he might be a stud for 5 years.
Exactly.
Mike Williams, your number 42 player in Dynasty. John Ross, 51. Tyler Lockett at 57 is interesting. You still really like Tyler Lockett's talent.
I'm not giving up on – he's just so explosive.
Yep.
And the thing about him is I think he can be as good, if not better, of a deep threat than John Ross, but he has a full command of the route tree.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is the opportunity in Seattle. I mean, Doug Baldwin – I've spent this whole summer talking about how much I like Doug Baldwin, and everybody makes fun of me about it on the podcast, but he's a top 10 wide receiver each of the past two seasons. Yep. I don't think that changes.
And the thing with Baldwin is he's done that without a lot of volume.
Right.
There's just not a lot of volume to go around in Seattle.
There was more last year.
Yes.
Does it keep happening? And then Mike Williams, I think, is the clearest guy that, like, I'm not even sure he's going to be useful this year.
Yeah, I would, given the depth in that receiving core.
As the, like, where he was drafted, my initial thought after the draft was, well, Tyrell Williams is done. Mike Williams is going to come in and just take his job mm-hmm. immediately. Then Mike Williams is hurt and missing the entire summer. Now my thought is maybe by mid-season Mike Williams becomes a thing.
It could be a Laquon Treadwell situation.
It like could be a Laquon Treadwell.
We think Mike Williams is more talented than Laquon right. Treadwell now, but
Laquon largely Treadwell because Laquon Treadwell just did nothing for a year in the NFL. But in Dynasty, he's still he may not even be there in the fourth round.
Yeah. Kenneth Dixon, who's your number 62 player in Dynasty. I assume if he wasn't suspended for the first four games of the season,
yep,
he'd be top 100 for you.
If he wasn't suspended for the first four games and Baltimore wasn't like having a Terrence West love fest.
Yeah.
And I think part of the reason they're having the Terrence West love fest is because Kenneth Dixon's suspended and they just want to make him sound good. But yes, I do believe Dixon. I don't know that he's ever a number one running back, but I absolutely see high end number two potential. Probably second half of this year. I wouldn't expect he comes back and immediately he's the starter. He's going to have to earn it again.
Okay. And Sterling Shepard, number 67. Josh Reynolds, number 68. Sterling Shepard, it's just you got to wait until Brandon Marshall gets out of there pretty much for him to break out.
I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
I kind of think that he may be better than Marshall this year.
Okay.
I kind of think that Brandon Marshall's done. But there's still just a lot of mouths to feed in New York. And I will probably be higher on Shepard going into next year than I am this year. That third year breakout that is kind of mythical.
And Josh Reynolds for the Rams. Either Jared Goff gets good in a couple of years or they get a good quarterback in a couple of years.
Yeah.
That's the hope.
Let's hope first. I'm getting more nervous that Josh Reynolds won't be as good as Cooper Kupp, but I still think he is. I liked Reynolds a lot coming into the draft. He's got the opportunity to become the number one. The thing I love the most about Josh Reynolds is he has the ability with the deep ball and the red zone work to score fantasy points with not that many targets.
Yep. All right, let's talk about some players who are higher in redraft. They are inside of your top 100 in both Dynasty and Redraft, but they are at least 30 spots higher in Redraft. Let's start with Greg Olsen, who is 56 spots higher, and that's just as good as he's been. He's 31.
Yes.
He's 8 or 9 seasons into his career. You just don't know how long he's going to last, and he's not the Antonio Gates type who's just, you can see just posting people up in the end zone and remaining fantasy relevant. He could be
right.
He could be Jason Witten and play for 6 more seasons. But
the thing about Olsen, because he's actually 32,
mm-hmm.
but you look like what we saw happen with Witten is he couldn't run more than 5 yards past the line of scrimmage, so his yards per attempt fall down to like 8 or 9 yards per attempt. Olsen was 13.4 yards per reception last year, 14.3 the year before. I think he's one of the most underrated players in redraft this year because he only scored 3 touchdowns. In 2016, and
like we said,
yeah, I would expect somewhere in the 6 to 7 range that he had the 3 years before that. But you can't be that excited about a 32-year-old tight end in Dynasty.
Same goes for Tom Brady and Drew Brees. But what about Golden Tate? He's number 39 for you in redraft, in standard scoring, 84 in Dynasty. He's not young, but he's not old.
No, he's only 29, or he will be 29 before the season starts.
That's actually a little older than I thought.
Yeah. I like Golden Tate this season because of the opportunity. I don't think Golden Tate is actually a number one receiver for a good football team.
Okay.
I think he's the number one for the Lions this year because their second best receiver is Marvin Jones, and we saw what happened when Marvin Jones was the number one. I don't know, though. Like, I expect his level of play will remain fairly stagnant for the next 3 years. But I don't know that his opportunity does, because I would expect the Lions would like to have someone that pushes him to the number two role in the next 3 years, especially when he's 31 years old.
Yeah.
So you gave me this list. I'd never looked at specifically which players I had ranked higher in Dynasty, and my first thought was with Tate, I don't know if there should be quite that big of a difference.
I think it makes sense, just because another thing when you're drafting in Dynasty is you do want a target upside.
Right.
Like, Dynasty is a high-variance game. We can barely we can predict the upcoming season okay.
Right.
But 3 years from now, that's just impossible to predict. There's so much that can go into it. One guy steps wrong, and all of a sudden, he's just not the same player. So you do want to – Golden Tate's not a high upside play.
Right.
And so I can get why he's lower in Dynasty. Same with Michael Crabtree. You are who you are at that point in your career. I think the same with Mark Ingram, who's 41 for you in redraft, and that's probably higher than the consensus.
That's like 30 spots higher than the consensus, and I wrote about this yesterday on CBSSports.com, ranking the fantasy assets of the Saints. There is a lot of concern about Mark Ingram being in a committee, and Mark Ingram has been in a committee his entire career.
Exactly.
He got 51% of the team's carries last year, 37% of their targets out of the backfield, and he had 1,300 total yards and 10 touchdowns.
And that was with, like, some really just – like, just dumb stuff. Like, there were a couple games where, like, Tim Hightower was the team's number one running back, and it just didn't make any sense.
Right.
Like, he had that one game where he fumbled.
And I don't think, like, Tim Hightower and Travaris Cadet saw 199 touches last year. I don't think the odds of a 32-year-old coming off knee injury.
Hey, Adrian Peterson said his goal is 500 receiving yards.
Well, that would be fine, because Travaris Cadet probably had that last year. Now, I'm not that worried about him, and Kamara is a rookie that will have some success, but he can fill the cadet role.
Yeah. All right, Isaiah Crowell, someone that has gotten a lot of hype this season. You're buying in. You have him as a third-round pick in redraft, only 65 in Dynasty. Is that just not 100% sure how good he is, not 100% sure how long he'll be in the spot that he is, just a little uncertainty?
Yes. The second part, I like Crowell, and he's a younger player, so it doesn't really make a lot of sense for him to be lower in Dynasty, other than you will see, I think, almost as a rule that running backs are lower in Dynasty because they're just so much harder to project for 1 year, much less 3 years from now. I'd rather spend my draft capital sure. on receivers that are more reliable over a long period of time. So that's where I'm at with Crowell.
All right, Amir Abdullah, Jimmy Graham, and DeSean Jackson. Amir Abdullah was one, once you saw this list, you were kind of like, well, maybe that gap shouldn't be quite as big. He's 89 in Dynasty, 57 in redraft. But running back, like you said, inherent uncertainty there.
I could see Amir Abdullah becoming the number one in Detroit this year. I could see by next year we're not even drafting Amir Abdullah anymore because we're tired of this is going to be his year.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there's such a huge range of possibilities with him.
I mean, I feel like Amir Abdullah looked better last year is a thing that I hear.
Uh-huh.
And he played one game? You get hurt in the second game or the first game?
Second game.
So, like, he looked better. Well, he played five quarters.
Right.
So, that's one where I don't know what to do with Amir Abdullah this season.
Right.
And I don't think I've drafted him in any of the mocks that we've done so far.
No, you haven't, because Azer always does.
And we'll move on, but we'll quickly look at some that are higher in Dynasty. A lot of these are obvious, but there are a couple that stand out for me. Corey Davis, 23 in Dynasty, 76 in redraft. I think that makes a lot of sense. He should be the long-term number one in Tennessee, but rookie wide receivers with the class of 2014 aside tend to not make a huge impact.
Right.
shouldn't be a high-volume passing offense. So Hunter Henry, another one. Antonio Gates is still there. He only had like 55 targets last season. He was really good, really efficient with them, 36 catches, 8 touchdowns. But you can't rely on that kind of touchdown rate. So you need the workload to be there, and hopefully it will be 3 years from now. The one that stands out to me, though, Dante Moncrief. You have him 90th in redraft and 45th in dynasty.
Yeah.
Just talk to me.
I don't necessarily feel good about that.
You're gonna go into a dynasty draft this year.
Here's my thing.
Dante Moncrief and his like 723 career high receiving yards in the fourth round?
I know. And I've talked about how bad he's been so far in his career, and I guess what I would say is he is a receiver that a lot of very smart people think is very talented.
Yes.
And
he should show it at some point.
It is a better chance that he develops into this great thing that everyone thinks he could be over the next 3 years than it is this year.
He is very young. It's worth pointing out He was, I think he hadn't turned 21 by his first training camp.
That's correct.
He won't be 24 until 2 weeks into this year's training camp.
But I also think this is one of those situations where you pointed this out to me and he's probably going to slide down my dynasty rankings now. So thanks for that.
Anytime. All right. We're going to get to emails a little later. Five Guys Heath is conflicted on and a few more other things. But first, Buffalo Wild Wings understands that being a fantasy football league manager is a tough job. So it's important to get a first good impression. And that all starts with the draft. If you want your league to love you, then book your draft party at B-Dubs. You'll get a free draft kit. Enjoy a special draft feast of boneless wings, 3 sides, and 3 shareables for a special price to feed your league. So come in and get to drafting up some league manager love at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports at participating locations while supplies last. Heath.
Yes.
Let's hear five guys. I'm interested in this. 5 guys that you're conflicted on. This is the Heath Show.
The Heath
Show. And this is your favorite show that you've ever done on Fantasy Football Today.
Yeah. You're a better host than Adam because you just talk about things that have to do with me.
Well, that's because I haven't thought much about football over the last 6 months. And, you know, I don't want to expose myself as a fraud.
Oh,
5 guys Heath
fair.
Is conflicted on.
You just exposed yourself. This, I have to give a little bit of credit to the first one. And the idea for the whole segment to, I'm going to find the name on Twitter. And then I'm going to, I like to do a thing on Twitter sometimes where I compare 2 players and don't tell anybody who it is.
Sure.
And so I'm going to do that with these 2 players. And you already know who one of them is.
Okay.
It was Peter Bukowski. Was actually the person that pointed this out to me. And these are second-year quarterbacks.
Okay.
Not both of them from last year, but that's the second year of a quarterback's career. Okay? Quarterback A had a 59% completion percentage. Quarterback B had a 61.
Mm-hmm. I already know who quarterback A is.
You do?
I'm pretty sure.
Quarterback A had a 5.8% touchdown rate. Quarterback B was 4.9.
Yep.
That's comparable, right?
I know exactly who the 2 quarterbacks are.
A has a 3% interception rate. B had a 3.2. So B throws interceptions at a higher rate than A. Keep that in mind. 7.3 yards per attempt for quarterback A. 7.2 for B. Look at QB rating. Not a perfect stat, just throwing another number out there. 88.2 for A, 86.1 for B. You could add other statistics to make this debatable as to who was better in these individual seasons. But you could not definitively say that one was a lot better than the other. Would you agree with that?
Sure.
Quarterback A, I spent last...
Well, I think you should point out also.
Yes.
Quarterback B was the number one pick in his draft class.
Yeah.
Very impressive. Strong pedigree. Really someone you should believe in. Quarterback A was number 3.
Yeah. Quarterback A, I spent all of last summer mocking.
Mm-hmm.
And mocking people that drafted him. And I was right. And it was Blake Bortles.
Yep.
And he was a disaster last year. Terrible in every way. And nobody wants to draft him now. You just took him in a 2QB league as your first quarterback and it ruined your draft.
Yep.
Quarterback B is Jameis Winston, and I love him, and I have him as a surefire top 10 quarterback, and that shook me.
To your core.
To my core.
Where did you have Bortles last year?
16, 17.
Because he was like 6 or 7 for a lot of people last year.
Yes.
So that was mostly where the gap was. But now you've got and basically the argument in Jameis's favor that you wouldn't make for Blake Bortles is that you just think Jameis is a better quarterback.
Right.
And has a more talented receiving core around him. Although both have really, really good young wide receivers who put up elite fantasy seasons in that quarterback's second year.
Right.
A lot of touchdowns for both in their second seasons.
So I think what I have to do to work through this.
You know what's really interesting?
What?
Blake Bortles' interception rate has actually improved 3 years in a row. Or 2 years in a row, I guess.
Yeah. I think what I have to do is I'm going to try to write a piece. Why is Jameis different than Bortles? And just try to work it out in my head that why do I...
And you realize what you've done is that you've decided Jameis is better.
Right.
And now you're going to try to justify it.
Okay, but here's the thing. Like, normally when I'm doing a thing like this, mm-hmm. I'm on the opposite side of public perception.
Sure.
Everyone agrees that Jameis is much better than Blake Bortles.
Yeah. Jameis was someone, you know, when we started doing mock drafts in March, April, we've been doing them on and off, and they're going to start ramping up in a couple weeks, 2 times a week. Jameis was someone that I was like, yeah, I'm going to draft a lot of Jameis. I'm going to be the Jameis guy this year. And then I saw, like, oh, no, Jameis is going in, like, the 7th round. I'm not going to be the Jameis guy this year.
Right. No, he's a consensus top 10 quarterback. I'm not sure he deserves it.
Okay, so that's one guy you're conflicted on. Let's hear a couple more.
We started off with Carlos Hyde at the top of the program, and I loved Carlos Hyde's talent.
Yep.
I think he has top 5, 6, 7 potential talent in the league. Not a great situation in San Francisco. Never really has been.
Although,
assumingly, it would be better with Shanahan.
Kyle Shanahan has made pretty good fantasy production out of not great situations
and
before.
I would happily say that Carlos Hyde is better than Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman.
Sure.
But he could not have a job, too. It's a very dicey situation. I have him ranked as a mid-range number 2 running back. And that's hedging a little bit. Because I believe he should, if I knew he was going to play and be the starter week 1 and get his normal workload, I would have him in the Todd Gurley range.
Well, he was on an almost 1,400-yard pace over 1,600 games total yard between receiving and rushing. He was on a 1,200-yard rushing pace. He had a really good season last year can the situation be worse?
No, I don't. Well, yes.
Their quarterback's worse, I think.
I
think Kaepernick's better than Brian Hoyer.
We'll see.
And at very least, better for a running back.
Right. The situation could be worse because the coach could dislike him and he could be a backup. But I don't really think that's all that possible. I think people are, like, he's going in the 4th or 5th round. Mm-hmm. That's excellent value, in my opinion.
Yeah. And he's got, this would be the last year on his deal because he was not a first-round pick. So he's going to be a restricted free agent at the end of this season, right?
Right.
Okay. Another guy that you're conflicted on.
Frank Gore. Super old as dirt.
3,100 career touches, Frank Gore.
Yes. Keeps being a top 20 running back, Frank Gore, every year.
There.
And I had him ranked originally in the 30s at running back. His ADP is 30th at running back. But then I started looking at some of the guys that I have ranked ahead of him. And, like, one of them is Tevin Coleman.
Who doesn't have a...
He's a backup running back.
Yeah, he's a backup.
Another one's LeGarrette Blount. Am I really that worried about Frank Gore's age and not worried about LeGarrette Blount's situation?
Yeah.
Another one was Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, there's no argument for Adrian Peterson ahead of Frank Gore.
No, not at all. And his ADP is, like, 5 rounds ahead of him.
That doesn't make any sense.
So... I've
what's Frank Gore's ADP right now?
I've moved Gore up and up and up. What's Gore's up to ADP?
Yep.
It is middle of the 7th.
Okay.
Peterson is not 5 rounds ahead.
Yeah.
I was looking at somebody else right next to Peterson in the rankings. It's strange.
Peterson is being drafted ahead of Frank Gore, about 15 spots ahead of him.
Right.
Tevin Coleman's being drafted. This is Fantasy Pros combined ADP. Tevin Coleman's being drafted two spots ahead of him. LeGarrette Blount's being drafted five spots ahead of him. Mike Gillisley, who we have no idea if he has a job.
Like, I do still like Gillisley more than him.
Sure, but like just pointing out that like Mike Gillisley's someone that we don't have any idea what his role is, and he's got one good season.
Right. Bilal Powell. Bilal Powell is the backup running back. They've said it all summer.
And so, yeah, Frank Gore's probably a really good value as the 29th running back off the board.
I've moved him up in my rankings. He's going to be somewhere closer to 25. Number four, Tyreek Hill.
Okay.
I had decided that Tyreek Hill was a bust candidate.
Okay.
And then Jeremy Maclin left Kansas City.
Yep.
And I thought, well, that's going to move his ADP up even more. And so he's really going to be a bust candidate now. And then I start going through this process of expectations for the team. And even if I lower what he does in the rushing game, mm-hmm. and even if I just forget about what he does on special teams, because some leagues don't count that, I still think he's a high-end number three, borderline number two wide receiver, and his ADP is 24th.
At wide receiver, yeah.
At wide receiver.
Yep.
He's going right about the start of the fifth into the fourth round. That's where he should be drafted.
Yeah, I mean, I can't shake the Cordero Patterson comp. Given what we've seen from Cordero Patterson, it makes more sense to just say Cordero Patterson wasn't good and had a fluky rookie season, and Tyreek Hill is much more talented, but that's because we haven't seen what Tyreek Hill does. If Tyreek Hill has a bad season, who knows?
Right. I mean, Patterson never had a year quite as good as Hill's, right?
His rookie season was really close.
Was it?
They're very comparable, and Tyreek Hill averaged 9.7 yards per catch last season. For a guy who's as explosive as he is, that's not great. Alex Smith is his quarterback, so the volume has a pretty hard ceiling of probably like 110 targets.
Yeah,
but the price is reasonable.
Right. My current expectations for Hill, and you just tell me where you think I'm off.
Okay.
Because I've actually got him lower in the rankings than where the expectations say he should be.
Sure.
I do think 120 targets is possible.
Okay.
That's going to put him around 75 catches.
Probably.
Which would put him somewhere around 800 yards.
Yeah.
I think even if you lower the rushing expectation, he's going to run the ball occasionally.
Sure.
You give him 150 yards, so he's pushing 950.
Yeah, he's probably a number two.
Yeah.
And he's currently being drafted ahead of Martavis Bryant, who very much an unknown, Golden Tate, who we don't think has much upside, Larry Fitzgerald, similar, Brandon Marshall. I think you probably think Brandon Marshall's being overdrafted. The one that I thought of at the end of last season when Tyreek Hill was mm-hmm. just everybody's darling and Allen Robinson had really fallen on hard times, especially before the last couple of games when he bounced back a little bit. But, you know, I had thrown out a Twitter poll, who do you want to draft first next season, Allen Robinson or Tyreek Hill? Tyreek Hill is going 10 spots below Allen Robinson, so that makes sense, but I was worried we would reach a point where
right.
Tyreek Hill was being drafted ahead of him, and I thought that would be ridiculous.
Yeah, I think there's basically one guy being drafted ahead of him, maybe two that shouldn't. Oh, holy cow. One of them is being drafted as a top 12 wide receiver. That's Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, people are very excited about Brandon Cooks.
And then Julian Edelman is going two spots ahead of Hill. I don't see any way that's even possible.
Yeah.
Unless, like, multiple people are injured. But I'd probably take Tate over Hill.
Yeah, two New England wide receivers being drafted as top 24 wide receivers seems...
Unless Gronk gets hurt.
Yeah, but there's just so many mouths. Like, I don't know if I've drafted anybody from that offense this season. It just... there's just too much uncertainty for me.
Right.
And the last guy you're conflicted on.
It's Tyler Eifert.
Okay.
There's so much potential there. And... I don't even know for sure if he's going to be ready for the start of the season, which is a perfect thing for Tyler Eifert because he's never playing a full season.
Yeah.
So I could understand a ranking of Tyler Eifert really as high as maybe sixth
mm-hmm.
in standard, not in PPR because he's not going to catch a ton of passes, I don't think.
I mean, he's never had an 800-yard pace. Last year he was very close.
Right.
But he's never played a season, even a partial season, where he's had an 800-yard pace. And he's played 22 games in the last 3 years.
I think you could make an argument for putting him in that Martellus Bennett, Jack Doyle tier at the end of the number one tight ends. I currently have him eighth, which is in PPR, which is after Kyle Rudolph and Zach Ertz.
He's tight end seven right now in standard.
But before Ebron and Henry.
I think that makes sense.
But I don't feel comfortable with ranking him anywhere.
I think that also makes sense. Okay. I'm not sure if this is going to work, but I have this idea. I want your just kind of 10,000-foot view, three things that you know to be true about fantasy football.
Right.
And one thing that you believe to be true about fantasy football. Well, give me the three things you know to be true.
I know that you weren't on the podcast when this became a thing, but we've talked about my NIPS quite a bit. No intentional positional strategy.
Sure.
And that will be the first thing that I know is there is no silver bullet.
Okay. Yeah.
Zero running back is not a fail-safe.
Nope.
Heavy running back is not a guarantee. Not even, like, I generally like to wait on quarterback. But I'll take Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers if they're there in the fourth round. There should be no hard, steadfast rule going into the draft that I will not draft this position until this point, or I will not draft this player even.
Sure.
Because maybe everybody else doesn't like him and he falls way too far.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the extreme guy on not drafting a quarterback, but that's mostly just because I like the value of those low ends. So what I usually do is I make like a three-person tier with like Kirk Cousins, Phillip Rivers, and Eli Manning. And basically, once two of those three are gone or I reach my last pick, I take the last one that's left.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that that's not a hard and fast rule. If two of those three guys go in the 10th round, I'm going to have to take one with my next pick, even if I usually wait a couple more rounds.
And then the second one that I would say I've kind of come to believe in more in the last year, maybe even learned this in the last year, efficiency metrics are not all that sticky.
I think that's very true because you're talking about Isaiah Crowell is actually a really good example of this.
Yeah.
He had, I wish I knew who was saying it, but somebody tweeted the other day about Isaiah Crowell, basically, from week 5 until week 16, he averaged like 3.2 yards per carry. He had a huge week 17 game against the Steelers team that benched like 8 of their defensive starters in the first quarter.
Right.
He also had like a 89-yard run. And he only had like, 900 total rushing yards? So you take that one rush out, and all of a sudden his rushing average plummets. You know, you're talking 4.5 yards per carry coming off on one. And look, that play happened, but plays like that aren't repeatable. And this isn't a knock against Isaiah Crowell. I think the opportunity that he has is pretty good. But, you know, he had an 85-yard run on 950 yards.
Right.
Like, that's, you take that one rush off and his rushing average plummets. And that's because averages can be influenced, especially on smaller sample sizes, by big outliers.
Well, and smaller sample sizes is kind of where I was going with this. Tyler Lockett was one of my favorite breakouts last year because he'd been one of the most efficient rookies in the history of the NFL on a per-target basis, and it didn't end up meaning anything at all. And it's not, I'm not just saying because Tyler Lockett flopped, now that doesn't work. There's been a lot more research that's come out this in the past 12 months just showing how unpredictable per-target numbers and per touch numbers can be. We're much better at projecting volume than how efficient somebody's going to be with volume. But that kind of leads into my third thing, and that's that touchdowns are the least predictable stat.
Yep.
And you hit on this earlier. If the one thing Matt Ryan going into 2016, I had him ranked right around number 9 quarterback. His ADP was around 16th. At the position.
He was going undrafted a lot.
Right, because he had a 3.4% touchdown rate in 2015. Last year, he rebounded to an unreasonable level, not just in touchdown rate, but in yards per attempt, 9.3, 7.1. He doubled his touchdown rate in 2016. His career marks 4.7. I would guess he's going to be somewhere around 5 this year. That's going to lead to closer to 30 touchdowns than 38. I would guess the yards per attempts fall. What we saw last year that was different was the Falcons, for the first time in 4 seasons, had a winning record,
yep.
And he only threw 534 passes. If that's the trend, then he might be worse than number 9 quarterback.
Yep.
The two guys I'm having a really hard time ranking this year, that I have back-to-back that I don't think anybody else has in the same neighborhood. It's Matt Ryan and Matthew Stafford. Stafford's a consensus 14th quarterback off the board. Ryan's a top 3 or 4 or 5 guy.
Yeah.
I have Ryan 9th and Stafford 10th.
Well, all that means is that you're much more likely to have Matthew Stafford on your team than
right.
Ryan.
But, like, I would guess Stafford's going to throw 10% more passes. Yep. And they're kind of similar on an efficiency basis. So why would we think Ryan's going to be better?
Because he was better last season. Because he had more touchdowns last season and had a crazy high yards per attempt, and that's it.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of arguments on the podcast, I'm sure, with Dave and Jamie this year over Matt Ryan.
The irony about Matt Ryan having this huge jump in touchdown percentage, you said it went from 3.8 to
7.1,
that's almost double. Julio Jones' touchdown rate basically stayed the same.
Yeah.
Like, those touchdowns went to everybody except for Julio Jones, and they had a lot of, like, swing passes to Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman that they took in. Like, there were a lot of fluky things like that. And one guy, we mentioned Eric Ebron, I'll stay at the same position. Another guy that I think benefits from this mindset, and I talked about this yesterday on Twitter, Zach Ertz, who had 816 yards in 14 games last season, 78 receptions, yards per attempt, not great, only 4 touchdowns, and he's never had more than 4 touchdowns in a season.
Right.
But in 2013, when he was a rookie, he had 4 touchdowns and 36 catches. Last year, he has 4 touchdowns on 78 catches. He doesn't even have to be a 1 touchdown every 9 catches guy.
Right.
If he's just a 1 touchdown every 12 catches, you're probably looking at 6 or 7 touchdowns over the course of a season, and all of a sudden, you're probably talking about Zach Ertz as a top 5 tight end.
Right.
I think he's a good value this season.
I agree.
And what's your outlandish thing that you believe?
I don't know how outlandish this thing is. And it will probably seem less outlandish with you here than if I said this with Adam or Dave and Jamie.
Sure. Team Kreath.
Team Kreath. But I mostly think consistency is a myth.
Okay.
I know we shouldn't just use end of season rankings.
Mm-hmm.
Per game is much better. Like, if a guy missed 3 games and scored the same amount as, but when 2 guys play the same number of games and one guy scored 20, 30, 40 more fantasy points, and you tell me I don't love that guy because he wasn't that consistent, I can't roll my eyes any harder.
Okay.
I don't know that it's that predictive. I don't know that it matters that much. And I think we really overestimate the consistency of guys that we view as quote-unquote consistent.
Okay. I think that's probably fair. Now, I guess, to get into more specifics, like Mike Evans, I saw somebody tweet yesterday that Mike Evans had 1 top 12 fantasy wide receiver game in his final 8.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't bother you at all.
So, this is getting even worse.
Okay.
Like, we're now talking about consistency over a smaller portion of the season.
Yeah. I think the big thing is a lot of it's just ordering. Like, it's really easy to overrate, like, well, he wasn't consistent. Well, what does that mean? Like, if he had 7 good games in a row and 9 bad games in a row.
Right.
Is that worse than alternating good and bad games over the course of a season? I think most people would think it's worse because there was a 9-game stretch where you couldn't use that player or he wasn't very good.
Right.
But in terms of projecting them forward, I just don't know how much it matters. Full season, and part of my issue with fantasy football analysis is I view things from a very analytical perspective, and the small sample sizes in football make it inherently a little trickier to do that.
Right.
But I think it's easy to over, like, the full season is what you should worry about. The full season numbers are probably more telling of who that guy is.
Yes.
And so, I agree with you. It's not controversial to me.
That's the problem.
It might be controversial.
Would have been better if we had somebody to yell at me in a high-pitched voice about it.
I can't believe you.
That was one of the worst Adam Azer.
I wasn't trying to impersonate Adam Azer. I was just, you said high-pitched voice.
Okay.
All right, let's get some emails before we close out the show. fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. Network alias, I'm new to fantasy football and have been in discussions with fellow team owners over the issue of playing without a waiver wire. Their argument is that it's more fun to have no regulations on free agent acquisitions. What do you think about that, Heath?
See, when they said playing without a waiver wire, I was thinking it was like a league where you just didn't get to make adds and drops. But you're saying there's no, like, middle of the game, guy scores a rushing touchdown, you can just go
pick
him up.
I would assume once the game, like, it starts on Monday but or whatever the day, but, yeah, no waiver wire, all free agency.
I don't – that's not my preferred method of playing.
Okay.
I would not mind it if I had one league like that. Because I do think, and you and I have had this debate in fantasy baseball as well, it rewards the person that's paying attention the most, and it rewards the person that's quickest to the waiver wire when news breaks.
Sure, but...
And there are positives and negatives to that.
Yeah.
The negative would be, I don't want to have to pay that close of attention. The positive would be, we're rewarding effort, and I think that is a good thing. So I wouldn't mind playing in one league like that.
You do love Matthew Dellavedova.
I would not like playing in, like, I'm going to probably play in 25 leagues this year. I can't have 25 of them
be
that. I'm just going to get destroyed.
All right, Steven emails, when you are doing a zero RB strategy, what are your thoughts about high floor, low ceiling guys like Frank Gore? We actually discussed this earlier. He's a weekly solid RB2, or would you rather target guys like Kareem Hunt, who might get a big role and be league winners, but...
I think you need a mixture of both.
Okay.
You have to have some upside.
Yeah.
But you can't have all upside guys, especially in that situation.
Yeah.
I like the idea of taking, like, Martin Dixon, some of the guys that you're going to get nothing from in the first half.
I draft them a lot, and I go with the zero RB.
And then focus on guys that you think are going to have starting jobs at the beginning of the year, but nobody wants to draft.
I've drafted a lot of Terrence West.
Matt Forte, Jonathan Stewart, Terrence West.
There's a chance Terrence West is just the starter all season.
It's a possibility. At the very least, I expect him to be the starter until Doug Martin gets back. Yeah.
Kenneth Dixon.
I expect him to definitely be the starter until Kenneth Dixon gets back, but I'd rather have Martin and West than Dixon and West because there's a chance I have two starting running backs.
Yes. All right, we've got a missed connections email from David. I was walking my dog in my neighborhood listening to the podcast. As another dog owner approached, I muted my volume to say hi or hear what if they had to say anything. We nodded as we passed, and then I heard the podcast playing, but I hadn't unmuted. He was listening to the same podcast out loud on his phone. He lives in Apex, North Carolina, so he wants this person to hear this email and know that they were out there.
If you like pina coladas.
Exactly.
And getting caught in the rain.
And David's actual question is, it's an auction strategy idea. Top running backs go for mid to upper 60s in his $200 budget. What if he just bids $70 on David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell? He thinks he could win them both. Grab one mid-price wide receiver and just cheap dollar upside guys the rest of the way. With a little good waiver wire luck, getting a little lucky, this could be a good strategy. What do you think?
With a little waiver wire luck and a whole lot of injury luck.
That's the big thing.
Right.
Running backs, the thing about zero RB is it's not that, like, running backs suck. It's not that, like, there are no good running backs. It's not that David Johnson, Ezekiel Elliott, and Le'Veon Bell aren't phenomenal players. They clearly are.
Right.
It's just that their running backs are really hard to predict on a year-to-year basis, and a big part of that is running backs just get hurt more often. It's just a fact of life. And those three guys, especially coming off the seasons that they had the kind of workloads that we typically look askew at, and nobody really is this season, and I get it. These guys were so good that it would be dumb to doubt them. But my feeling about the top three running backs is I'm going to go ahead and say at least one of them busts. I don't know which one, but just playing the percentages.
So are you saying if you had a top three pick, you wouldn't take one of them?
No, I have. And I never feel good about it because it goes against, like, my beliefs as a fantasy football player, which is that I just want to avoid investing in. There's just I think there's a really good chance that one of these guys is a bust for whatever reason. The offense isn't as good as we think. He loses a couple touchdowns where he gets dragged down at the goal line. Injury. And so investing that much in two of them, it could be a league-winning strategy. You could end up in last place very quickly.
Yep.
Richard in England has a question about draft strategy in larger leagues. He's in a 14-team and a 16-team league. How do you adjust your draft strategy for larger leagues? Are you more likely to take a quarterback and tight end early? Or are you more likely to wait on both and load up on running back and wide receiver?
When you get to the point of, no, you know what? A 16-team league, I might get a little bit worried about starting quarterback.
Okay.
I think it's more likely that somebody prioritizes a backup quarterback, and then we're getting to the stage where you might actually run out of quarterbacks if you don't take one
early. That happened to me last year in our 16-team editorial. I can't remember who I ended up with, but they weren't good.
Right. So, yes, you get a little bit more worried about quarterback. I get a lot more worried about tight end because there's like 13 or 14 tight ends as opposed to the 16 to 18 quarterbacks that I like. Yep. So I'm going to prioritize both of those positions more in a deeper league.
All right, we've gone past an hour, so we're going to do one last one real quick. Blake's been in the same league for coming on 8 years, and they've never had a last-place trophy. He wants to change that. Came up with the idea of forcing the last-place person every Sunday to wear an embarrassing jersey. RG3 Browns, Tebow Jets, something along those lines. I like that.
Yeah.
My favorite last-place one that I've heard is my friend Nick. Whoever gets last place in their league has to sign up and pay for and take the SATs with a bunch of high school students at 6 in the morning on a Saturday and then post their results for the entire league to see. I think that one's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that as well.
My league has a toilet seat that you have to sign. Everybody who's in last place has to sign it and then wear it around their neck for the entirety of the draft.
That's nice as well.
All right. This is a nice podcast, Heath.
You did an excellent job, Chris.
Was passable. Replacement level.
Replacement level.
I appreciate it. Adam will be back next week, and I got to think you guys are going to start ramping up these podcasts soon, 4 or 5 times a week in the next coming weeks.
Absolutely.
So that'll be fun. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.